Welcome into the FWFB Football Podcast. You can find us at friendswithfantasybenefits.com or at Fantasy Benefits on Twitter. I'm your host, Mike Alexander. Along with me tonight is Colin Weatherwax. What's going on, Colin?
How's it going, Mike? Thanks for having me again.
Good, good. And special guest, Mike Clay of ESPN. How you doing tonight, Mike?
Hey, I'm good. You know, someone just pointed out today we're 4 weeks from the Hall of Fame game. I just can't believe how close we're getting to the season. So, yeah, it's exciting. We do football year round, but everybody's starting to get into football mode now. And, you know, any excuse to talk football is okay with me.
Yeah, it feels like it gets here faster every year. And the NFL has obviously made a machine of year round coverage. So we're covering it earlier and earlier in the summer. And tonight we're talking wide receivers. So I reached out to Mike and asked him to get on. If you're not aware, Mike's been at the forefront of statistical research as far as NFL goes for a while now, particularly A dot, average depth of target, some things like that. So be interested to get your take, Mike, on some certain wide receivers who are lightning rods coming into this 2018 season.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been really cool to dive into the data. You know, before ESPN, I was at Pro Football Focus. I was able to get into some of the stuff like average depth of target. You mentioned that they were one of the first sites to track that kind of thing. So, you know, I was fortunate to be there to have that information. And, I'm a football nerd guy. So I dive into that stuff and create new stats like that, like OTD. I'm actually going to drop another one here in a couple of weeks. So, it's always fun when you're a nerd like me, you know, to get into that kind of stuff, to have access to this kind of next level data that we get. You know, it's just great.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to see. You know, yourself, Josh Hermsmeyer, a lot of other good people out there have been pushing the boundaries of what you can achieve with statistics, because football is not a sport that's always embraced statistical analysis.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you mentioned Josh, because the stuff he's doing is stuff I was doing a few years ago when I started to get access to this data. Of course, I had it before him, so I had the itch, and I did a lot of the same research. But he's so much smarter than me that it's great. I love that smart people are actually getting access to this now, and they can do the heavy lifting at a level I can't get to, and then we can all use it to make better decisions. So yeah, it's great. Josh is doing awesome work. Cannot recommend him enough. And actually, I just did an article on running backs, kind of, you know, red flags for the season. And I mentioned him in that, some of the work he's done in that piece. So totally a great name drop there. That's a smart guy.
Yeah. I make a joke probably every couple of months that I need someone on Twitter to just explain Josh's timeline to me.
Yeah. But once in a while I'm in that boat too. Luckily I've done a little of the digging he's done. So, I get at least the conclusions that he comes to, I know they align with what I've seen. So at least there's that, you know, it makes me feel good.
Right. So before we dive in on the receivers, I wanted to talk a little general strategy as we usually do, particularly zero running back strategy, which it feels like people are getting ready to throw dirt on the zero running back grave a little prematurely, in my opinion. To do that would be to dismiss statistical analysis, and that's never a winning proposition. I said it last week when we did running backs, you can go zero running back, you can go zero wide receiver. In my opinion, where you're getting an edge is by compartmentalizing your team and your season and investing in a particular asset with the most of your draft capital, and then your waiver wire or, you know, however your free agent system works, that capital later on, and increasing your odds of hitting on an upside running back and upside wide receiver. Mike, you were in the FSTA draft recently, and you went zero wide receiver, correct?
Yeah,
I'm sorry, zero running back.
Yeah, zero running back, right? Yeah, and that wasn't really the plan. It's never really the plan, you know. There was drafts, when zero running back, I would say the year after it was kind of reintroduced to the industry and got really hot a few years ago, I was in a draft with a lot of those guys like Sean and, you know, a lot of people that utilize that strategy. And, they would all go, like pretty much everyone would go zero running back. And I would take, I think the one year, actually it happened about back-to-back years, it's the Apex draft. Back-to-back years, I like five of my first six picks were running backs. And the first year, I just I think three of the five got hurt, but the other two were great. I think I had David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell, something like that. And I just dominated the league, you know, like you can pivot away from, you know, zig when other people zag, I guess is the way we usually put it. You can do that just to get the best players on your roster. I don't recommend forcing a position or you're going to end up, you know, you're going to end up with a weak roster. You know, someone's going to be better than you if you force yourself to go to a certain position and don't maximize your lineup. So I was happy for the most part with the way that team came out. And really quick, just to kind of address what you said there first, which, you know, was or at some point there you mentioned about the running back position. Yes, it is extremely important to be good there. You know, having one or two really good running backs is a game changer. I mean, that's probably your best path to winning a league is having dominant workhorse running backs. So that would tell you, okay, well then, Mike, obviously you want to get running backs early, right? I should go running back heavy and load up on those positions. The problem is they get hurt at a much higher rate than the other position. It's a matter of finding those running backs. Where can you find the running backs? And there's no real position between running back, receiver, and tight end. The easiest position to get running backs is on waivers. It's much easier there than it is at the other two spots. So that's why, you know, maybe a pivot to wide receiver or a top end tight end and fade running back, especially in, you know, in that second and third tier, and address it later, work waivers, that kind of thing. And that's how you can maximize your starting lineup. So yeah, I think that's the common misconception is yeah, you need those top end running backs, but where do you get them? That's the trick.
Right. And you know, the reason running backs are easier on the waiver wire is it's a more projectable position. You know, if running back one goes down, running back two is probably the guy. You know, it's these days not quite a clear cut situation, but you can take a guess. You could even, you know, stash two guys in the Green Bay type situation where there's three chefs in that kitchen. But you know, that's easier to do than to pick up a wide receiver and hope he gets targets. If the running back is in the game, he's probably getting carries and targets as well. And two other things you brought up there, I just wanted to touch on, Mike. You know, one, you don't want to go into any draft with a clear cut strategy in mind. You want to have experience with these strategies. You know, do mocks, best balls, and see how you like the team shaking out, and just how to build that type of team. You know, zero wide receiver or zero running back, instead of, you know, just kind of doing it on the fly. And then the other thing you pointed out is when everyone's taking running back, that's the time to use zero running back. That you're going to get more value as those receivers get pushed back into the second round. You're getting two or three much better wide receivers than an even draft or a draft that people are heavy in wide receiver, like we saw 2 years ago. You know, the wide receivers were the top, I think, three out of the top four picks, and that just kind of dominoes throughout the draft. So this is an ideal time to do it. And you took a little heat, I think, on Sirius there, Mike, and it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because I think you put together a pretty solid zero running back team, and some of the guys that were scoffing at that team and the running back situation, and they might have to revisit that come the end of the season.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, years ago when I was going all running backs early, that was laughed at. Now I go in all receivers, flat that. That's kind of how it goes. But yeah, it's been back and forth. That's kind of, you know, every year I think there's a hot topic that kind of works its way through the landscape, through the fantasy industry. Right. And, you know, it was zero running back. It was, you know, the running back's dead. There's always kind of something. But yeah, this year it's kind of that battle between, you know, the running back is back, or do you fade that the running back because they're coming off the board so early. So it's a tricky one for sure. By the way, I'm not saying that you should just avoid running backs. I mean, I like an early pick so I can get a Bell or a Gurley or Johnson. Mm-hmm. I love getting one of those workhorses. There's nothing more attractive in fantasy than getting that, you know, 25 touch guy that's really good and going to get all the work. You got to take that early in your draft. But again, it's risky. Those guys are also in high jeopardy of missing games, if not a huge percentage of the season, with that kind of workload banging it between the tackles. So it's risky, but, you know, it's worthwhile with those sort of guys at the top of the draft.
Colin, where do you fall on zero running back?
It's a little difficult on zero running back for me. I was going to ask a question while we're on topic, Mike, just about the fact that we're in an era where the rookie player, I won't say receiver or running back, has just been so dominant just coming into the league. You did mention a couple years ago with the Odell Beckham class of wide receivers, how we all kind of, you know, focused our energy on wide receivers that next year. And then it feels like this year we're coming to the rookie running backs like Alvin Kamara, what he did last year, Kareem Hunt. How much does that factor into your strategy where, you know, a guy like Kareem Hunt before the injury to Spencer Ware, he was being drafted so late. And then guys, you know, like Joe Mixon and guys that burst on the scene like Dalvin Cook as well. And Alvin Kamara, of course, you know, they just came out of nowhere. How much is that playing into your strategy on zero running back where, you know, look, I can get a rookie running back who might get a lot of touches and he could end up being, you know, I won't say another Alvin Kamara, but someone who could definitely turn into an RB1 or RB2.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think it's dangerous to try and project a Kamara just because his efficiency was so far off the charts. It's ridiculous. Whereas like Kareem Hunt is more projectable, you know, like a lot of what he did was volume based. I know his yards per carry was high, but you know, he got a lot of volume and that allowed him to put up a huge fantasy season. So I think there's certainly candidates to do that this year. I mean, let's cross Barkley off. He's in his own category, but you know, you get into guys like Penny and Geis and Sony Michel, Ronald Jones, Royce Freeman, you know, Kerryon Johnson potentially a little bit later. You know, those guys have tremendous upside. Again, you don't take guys in rounds one or two, or maybe even early in the third, like Denver did, because you're happy at running back. You know, there's so many people talking about these other guys in these backfields, like Peyton Barber, for example, or Devontae Booker and Peyton Barber, the two that really jump out to me. You know, as if you know, how could you like Jones? How could you like Freeman? They have Booker, they have Barber. They're not just going to disappear. Well, you know, why'd they draft a running back in the second and early third round if they were happy at running back? These guys are going to play. And recent history shows that too. I mean, actually, you look back at guys at the past six seasons, the past six drafts, eight running backs before this year, the six seasons before this past draft, there were eight running backs picked in the first round. Six of them were top 10 fantasy running backs as rookies. These guys get the ball a lot and they produce. There's a reason they go that early. And you mentioned earlier, it's a projectable position. So as long as we can position them without, you know, serious threats to their touches in the backfield, which is the case for most of these guys, you know, I think they're positioned to be pretty good, but it is tough. I mean, where they're going in drafts, you're not getting much of a rookie discount, right? Rounds three, four, in the five. I mean, that's kind of tough. And honestly, I have no issue with people who say that tier is just a spot I'm going to fade. You know, even if you get into, you know, Jay Ajayi and Marshawn Lynch and some Lynch, I like his value, but some guys like that, a lot of two down backs, including the rookies in that tier. And it's kind of a risky spot to attack. So I totally understand people kind of staying away from that area.
And you also need the patience on that front because, you know, even if they are destined to take over the lead job, like Geis, you mentioned, he might need a couple games before he's, you know, giving you running back one value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like Howard, Chris Carson, recent years, you know, guys have taken a few weeks to really, get position, but I honestly, this group this year, how many were drafted early? I think it'll be pretty quick.
Yeah. All right. So let's jump on over to the tiers. I'm using MFL10 data for ADP. And then I just kind of lumped them into my own tiers and we'll discuss a few out of each one. So tier one, not really much up for debate. Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, Odell Beckham. What I'd like to find out from you, Mike, is how much of a case do you think there is for Beckham being taken over Hopkins in the first round?
I have them pretty close, actually. In the projections up on the site there at ESPN, I have Hopkins 6 points ahead. And again, I mentioned before, I have a new stat coming out in a few weeks and kind of a teaser to that. It doesn't look too kindly on Hopkins. What it essentially is going to tell you is that a lot of his production has come from opportunity. You know, it hasn't necessarily been great efficiency. And I think it's well documented that he's been very poor after the catch in his career. So that's interesting. And I mean, the good news is the volume is going to be there. We know that. And if Deshaun Watson is the real deal, he's going to perform at a high level nonetheless. But I think that concerns me a little bit because if the volume comes down a bit, do we think he can really blow the doors off of expectation? You know, what an average player would do? I think a little bit, but to the extent that Beckham does or Brown does, or even Julio Jones, who I've ranked ahead of both of those guys, I have Jones second after Brown. You know, I'm not sure. I think Hopkins is a special player, but maybe not quite to the extent of some of these other guys.
Yeah, those are great points. And also, it wouldn't surprise me if Watson misses a game or two this season, you know, with his play style. And after him, there's not much in the pantry at quarterback. We've seen that in the past couple seasons with the Texans. So that would ding his production. All right, going into tier. Go ahead, Colin. Do you have a...
Sorry, the thing for me on Hopkins is, like you said, Mike, even if it comes down, his targets come down from 175 to like 150, even if it comes down to that, if all those targets are from an accurate quarterback and just in Deshaun Watson, wouldn't you rather take that leap over Odell Beckham, who's coming off an injury and also has the prima donna type phase in him?
I was just going to say, I do have Hopkins third and Beckham fourth. So I was kind of making the case that I could understand going that direction. But I will say this, I would definitely not say Watson is accurate. He was, in terms of off-target rate, he was the most inaccurate quarterback in the NFL last season. And Bill O'Brien has mentioned that. That's not a secret. You know, he had some trouble with some misguided throws, we'll say, some inaccurate throws. And that was overshadowed by his big plays. And, you know, that could creep up this year for sure. I don't think Watson is a sure thing. When, you know, we've seen these guys come out flying in the NFL and then fall back to earth in a hurry. And especially him coming off another torn ACL. I mean, it's not a sure thing that he's going to be a superstar. I mean, there's reason for optimism, but, you know, there should be a little bit of caution baked into that.
Yeah. And for me, it's interesting how much I like Beckham as an Eagles fan. I feel like since he's a Giant, I should have a little bit of built-in despise, but I like him. He scores touchdowns, and you know that's what wins weeks for you. But yeah, valid points about off-field issues and health issues as well, Colin. All right, going to tier two. We've got Julio Jones, Michael Thomas, Keenan Allen, Devontae Adams, AJ Green, and Mike Evans. The two guys I think that I want to dig in here are Devontae Adams and AJ Green. You know, Adams has been coming on and Green has been slipping into the second round. I think both offer a good amount of upside. Obviously, the Green Bay offense is a much better offense than Cincinnati, but last year was such a lost year for the Bengals. You know, they changed coordinators very early in the season. Nothing really went right for them. The offensive line was in shambles. So they've addressed some of those needs. How do you feel, Mike, on those two guys?
Which one specifically?
Devontae Adams and AJ Green.
Adams and Green. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think they're solid plays. I have them 7 and 8 in my rankings. Adams, most touchdowns in the NFL the past two seasons. You know, as long as Aaron Rodgers is in there, he's going to be a dominant number one. And by the way, I know there's some chatter about him. You know, he's the number one now. Can he be the clear number one? Can he handle that sort of coverage? Well, if you were paying attention last year, he already did. You know, I know Jordy Nelson was in the lineup and wasn't doing much, but there was a switch. You know, I do a lot of work on receiver cornerback matchups. There was a switch early on in the season. Actually, I first noticed at week 5 when number one corner started to shadow Adams and not Nelson. That was kind of the evidence that defenses viewed Adams as a number one. So when you see Rhodes on him and not Nelson, and you see Marshawn Lattimore on him and not, you know, it starts to be pretty evident that Adams is the one. So I think he'll be fine. He's probably going to get about a quarter of the targets in an offense that actually is a little shallow with weapons in the passing game.
Yeah.
Certainly high volume one. So I think Adams will be busy and he'll be fine in Green. What can you say? He's always kind of a mid to back end wide receiver one. It was a rough year for Cincinnati last year and he was the number 10 scoring fantasy wide receiver. So I think he'll be fine as well.
Who do you take out of these two, Colin, if you're up to pick?
If I'm up to pick, I'm definitely going to go with Devontae Adams, just basically what Mike Clay just said. I mean, with Devontae Adams, he's going to be the number one with Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, that beats Andy Dalton to AJ Green. No matter how talented AJ Green is, he's always had an injury bug. And Devontae Adams has had a few fluky injuries with a late hit over the middle of the field last year, kind of being the one that sticks out in my mind. But, you know, moving over to the number one, getting Jordy Nelson's targets, at least some of them. And like you said, Mike, they don't really have very many playmakers now. I mean, they have Randall Cobb, which I heard he's already in a walking boot, and Ty Montgomery, who might be seeing some time at running back, some time at wide receiver. And besides those two guys, I mean, those three guys, there's not really very much depth. So He's definitely the guy that I'm going to take in a toss up between those two guys.
And I feel like people have forgotten AJ Green. I don't disagree with you, Colin, but he's had some monster weeks in his career, and they're the kind of weeks that can change the course of your season. So if I can get him as late as he's going, I'm definitely happy. All right, let's go to tier three. I've got Doug Baldwin, Tyreek Hill, Adam Thielen, T.Y. Hilton, Larry Fitzgerald, Stephon Diggs, Amari Cooper. So this is the tier where, taking a guy from this tier is going to either lead your team to success, or it's going to ruin your season. I feel like, you're paying premium draft capital. Most of these guys are third round picks, early fourth round picks. Do any of these names make a clear cut case for a season changing projection for you, Mike?
I'll tell you what. Yeah, the guy I'd avoid. I have 6 of the 7 right in a row from 10 to 15 in my rankings. The guy that stands out that's way down is Amari Cooper. I know he had 2,000-yard seasons to start his career. There was plenty of reason to like him to break out again last year, and he hasn't done it yet. He spent 3 years as the number 2 behind Michael Crabtree in nearly every category for that Raiders offense. Mm-hmm. And, Crabtree's gone. Cooper's the one now. John Gruden said they're going to make him their one. But what if he's, another Dez Bryant from last year, just where it's, he's force-fed the ball, but the efficiency is just horrendous. It's right. Possible. Maybe he's just not going to live up to expectations. Last year was bad. It was just really, really ugly play.
Yeah, a lot of drops.
So that definitely concerns me. I'm not going to have him in any leagues this year. I have him at 22, which is a lot lower than most. So I get it. There's upside. Maybe year 4, he's still young. He breaks out. That's fine. I think that the high target volume gives him a nice floor. But again, I'm just going to aim for I just think there's some better options ahead of him.
And John Gruden also doesn't strike me as a patient man. So drops and miscues are going to remove targets from his share quickly, I think. Colin,
I didn't know this was doggone Raiders hour.
But by the way, Mike, Colin's a Raiders fan, so take everything he says with a grain of salt. Hey, Colin.
I actually want to get Mike's opinion on Tyreek Hill. He's such a lightning rod, and going in the range of Doug Baldwin, high target guys, like you were saying. Yeah. And to me, he's just a one-trick pony. I want to get your take on his value with the other 7 guys that are in this tier.
Yeah, he's after, before Cooper, I suppose he's the next in line for me at near the bottom of the tier. So I've kind of faded on him a little bit. I mentioned, again, I keep doing this, but it's a project I've been working on the last week or so. That project coming out doesn't look too kindly on him as well. And the reasons are obvious. He's not seeing the volume of some of these other guys, and he's relying on big plays. And it's hard to do. I don't care how mm-hmm. explosive you are in the NFL. It's really hard to sustain that level of production. And then you have a quarterback change. You bring in Sammy Watkins, who's a more conventional number one. There's obviously a big target share is going to Travis Kelce. And Andy Reid said at the Combine he wants to throw to Kareem Hunt more often. Mm-hmm. So if Hill's volume comes down even a little bit, and Alex Smith isn't there, if he doesn't hit him on one or two of those long balls, suddenly he kind of plummets in value. So, maybe year 3, maybe he does take a step forward. Maybe he becomes a more high volume player, but I just think that's unlikely in Andy Reid's offense and the way they use him. So, for me, I think I was a little more optimistic on him a month or two ago, but as I've dug in more and more, he's kind of fallen down a few spots. So still think he's a wide receiver too. Don't get me wrong, but definitely some concerns there.
All right, let's move to tier 4. We've got Allen Robinson, Josh Gordon, Demaryius Thomas, Brandon Cooks, Juju Smith-Schuster, Golden Tate, Alshon Jeffrey, and Marvin Jones. So the first guy I want your take on, Mike, Brandon Cooks, we've discussed him previously on the show. So give me your unbiased opinion on Cooks going to the Rams.
Well, I don't think you need to say unbiased. I'm not. I hope you don't think I'm biased sometimes.
I just mean before I tell you where we're at.
All right, I got you. Yeah, I'm very low on Cooks. I have him at 30. Again, he'll be nowhere near my teams this season. And the reason's obvious. I saw a tweet from Evan Silva. I think it was just a day or two ago. And I love Evan. We're on the same page on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And he didn't really say anything wrong. He just pointed out that nobody on the Rams had, I believe it was into the triple digits in targets last year, and Cooks has been there every season in New England. But we're talking about different offenses here. I mean, New England's a high-volume, pass-heavy offense, and the Rams were not particularly high-volume last year. And they're, you know, they'll run the ball, or they'll pass the ball plenty, sure, and they'll score a lot of points, but they also, you know, used Sammy Watkins in a specific way last year, and that's the role Cooks is going to. You know, I guess his volume may be higher than Watkins, but why would you change anything from what you did with Robert Woods last year? It worked so well, it would be silly to change that up. He's still playing that same position, and Cooper Kupp in the slot, same kind of thing. You have Todd Gurley out of the backfield. And by the way, Cooks, you know, the reason I mentioned New England's high volume offense is Cooks has never eclipsed the 19% target share. You know, he's always hung right around that number. And I don't know if he'll go any further than that in this Rams offense. I don't think there's room for it. And if that's the case in a lower volume offense, he's going to struggle, I think, even to get wide receiver two number. So, yeah, I'm a pinch low. Fine. You know, I like Sean McVay a lot. I think he's great at what he does. But I don't think he's going to live up to a fourth round ADP.
All right, so you're opposite of where I am on Cooks, Mike. I see him getting about his 115 targets that he typically gets. There's 90 some vacated between Watkins and Tavon Austin, and then you know, I think on that team, Woods gets injured almost every year, as well as you probably don't want Cooper Kupp to get over 100 targets, and I feel like he probably approaches where he's previously been, maybe not quite. Good point about the offensive pace. The Rams were a little bit slower than the offenses he'd come from in New Orleans and New England. All right. And then another guy I feel maybe is going a little too high, Juju Smith-Schuster. You know, I think a lot of his value came from touchdowns, which is a hard thing to repeat, especially, you know, out of the slot. And you know, we'll see what that offense looks like with a slight change at offensive coordinator. Colin, where do you fall on Juju?
I mean, this tier has a lot of polarizing, frustrating players in it, and Juju has a lot of juju. I mean, come on, you gotta use that pun. He being the second tier wide receiver to Antonio Brown in the Steelers offense, I mean, it has its nice qualities. I mean, he's always going to see the second best cornerback. I know you could say that, Mike, because you do the cornerback wide receiver matchups every week, but you know, he does rely on touchdowns. He does rely on explosive plays. And I do think out of this group, he's probably being overdrafted just a little bit. I would rather take my chances on Alshon Jeffrey or Brandon Cooks. I mean, this was probably my one chance to dog on a Philadelphia Eagles guy, but I'll probably take my chances on Alshon Jeffrey over Juju.
Yeah.
I'll just chime in on Juju. I have him at 21, so I'm fine with him. In some ways, I think he reminds me a little bit of Tyreek Hill this time last year, just in the sense of he was, he was very dependent on explosive plays as a rookie. He had the 97-yard touchdown. He had a good efficiency on deep balls, and that's not really sustainable. But the volume should rise, right? That's what the defense was, right, for Hill last year, right? We thought his touchdowns would come down. And if, you know, he'd come back to earth in a lot of categories, kind of like Alvin Kamara, like we talk about him this year. But we thought that he would overcome that with more volume. And I think that's the case with Smith-Schuster, not to mention that the Steelers offense from, we'll say one to 11, 1 to 12 is in the 11 starters to or 12 starters, depending on how you want to frame out the offense. Maybe the best in the NFL. I mean, that is a very good O-line, very good group of weapons. They're just very loaded. And that should allow them to score a ton of fantasy points as long as Ben Roethlisberger is under center. So that being the case, not to mention, I think the guy is a really good player, one of the next up and coming stars in this league. So I think he's just fine as a fringe wide.
Do you think
receiver.
He sees the majority of his time in the slot again this year? Or I know there's talk of him playing both inside and outside.
Oh, I think he'll be inside a lot. I mean, they're going to run a lot of 11. They'll have three wide receivers out there all the time, and that means Washington, the rookie, will be on the outside with Brown, and then Smith-Schuster in the slot. So, yeah, I mean, certainly if they have a second tight end on the field or a fullback, they'll be on the outside with Brown, whereas last year they used Bryant occasionally like that. But he was already passing out Bryant during the season last year and was the two, so I don't expect much change.
All right, let's hit tier five, Jarvis Landry. Michael Crabtree, Sammy Watkins, Devin Funchess, Julian Edelman, Corey Davis, Robert Woods, Chris Hogan, Will Fuller, and Emmanuel Sanders. So the first guy I'd like to get your opinion on, Mike, is Devin Funchess. A little touchdown dependent. You know, he's going to lose shares with Greg Olsen coming back, hopefully healthy. Do you think he can repeat as a, you know, a mid-level wide receiver?
I think so. I'm a little low on him, though. I've met 34, so I'm probably not going to have too much exposure, although I think I did just get him recently in an MFL 10, weirdly enough, as I say that. But, you know, I think my concern there is, they traded away Kelvin Benjamin last year, fine. They gave Funchess a shot at the one. He did pretty well, considering. But then you go ahead and take a wide receiver in round one. I mean, usually if you take a receiver in the first round, you want that guy to be your number one receiver, right? So maybe not right away, but in time. So, you know, you have Olsen there. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey's going to soak up targets. They bring in Torrey Smith as well. Jarius Wright. They added a lot of bodies there. So I'm just not sure he's going to be able to rely on a heavy target share. At the same time, at least for the time being, he is number one on the depth chart. It should be a decent offense. And he's, what, almost 6'5"? I mean, that's always going to breed a lot of near the goal line. And that's that obviously means touchdown. So there's things to like here, but obviously reasons for a little bit of concern.
And then is Chris Hogan the guy to own in New England with Edelman suspended 4 games?
Yeah, I think so. I have Hogan ranked ahead of Edelman. I think most do now. You know, I think he's – what's the stat? He's never finished as a top 60 receiver in his career yet, which is unbelievable for a guy we like this much. But you get it. You know, he was a fringe top 10 guy when he was healthy last season in a great Patriots offense. So, I have him inside my top 30. So, for me, he is a weekly starter.
All right. And then before we let you go here, Mike, what rookie wide receiver – do you think has the best shot at actually breaking out? Because you know, it's tough to do as a rookie. Wide receiver is a much tougher position than, say, running back as a transition.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I kind of battled between DJ Moore and Calvin Ridley early on, but I lean towards Moore simply because, you know, might not be as good of a pass offense with Cam there, but he is the best shot to be a number one, or really a number two, honestly, as a rookie with you know, Funchess, of course, there, and Torrey Smith, those kind of guys. Where if you go to Atlanta, you have Julio, who's going to soak up a ton of targets, and Mohamed Sanu, who I used to be hard on when he was in Cincinnati, but he's turned into an underrated player. He really is a good, solid receiver, so he's going to be busy there in the slot as well. So I'll lean towards Moore. You know, there's plenty of other guys that could work into a two job but don't have much ceiling past that. Of course, Anthony Miller in Chicago as Allen Robinson, Christian Kirk in Arizona as Larry Fitzgerald. And obviously a lot of people are on Michael Gallup in Dallas. He's a shot to be a one at least, and that makes him appealing.
All right, Mike, thanks for the time. Tell people where they can find your work.
This new site, up and coming, ESPN.com. I would definitely check that out if you haven't heard of it. A lot going on over there. We have some new content coming out here in the coming weeks. We have a great staff, and we'll continue to pump out fantasy content. We got some advanced studies coming up. I mentioned my new stat we'll have up there hopefully this month at some point, but a lot more to come. Excited for a football season to get here. About a month till the preseason, guys.
And what's your Twitter, Mike?
At Mike Clay NFL.
All right, Mike's a great Twitter follow. If you guys are looking for something to have stat wise in your timeline, he's the guy to follow.
All right, thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks for time, Mike.
So thanks again to Mike for making a few minutes. He had to run and get packed up and get ready for his vacation coming up here. So, Colin, we're moving on to tier six, you and I.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, now that we got rid of the dead weight of Mike Clay, just kidding. Like, Mike's one of the brightest guys out there and really glad he made a few minutes for us. But so tier six.
Y'all's Eagle fans, I mean, come on.
Fellow Eagle fan. all right, so tier six, we got Pierre Garçon, Cooper Kupp, Jamison Crowder, Marquise Goodwin, Randall Cobb, Devontae Parker, Jordy Nelson, Nelson Agholor. a lot of either age or disappointment kind of in this tier, with the exception of maybe Kupp and Goodwin. Goodwin scares me. I'm a huge Goodwin fan from the standpoint of a rooting interest. You know, I like him. He's a good story. He's been through some personal tragedy and persevered, and it just seems like a generally likable guy. I don't know how much I want to rely on him in a fantasy setting, not at this price. You know, he was an undrafted receiver generally last year. I know that offense is going to be better with Jimmy Garoppolo, but if Garcon is healthy, he's the X receiver. He's going to eat that volume up. Problem with Garcon is it's tough to rely on him for touchdowns because he's not a great athlete at this point in his career.
Yeah, there's actually a fun fact about Marquise Goodwin. I actually played high school football against him, and no, I did not beat him in any race. I played safety, and he was a wide receiver, of course, and he was really fast, if you didn't know. I mean, you should probably watch his tape because he's a lightning rod for sure. But he is someone that I'm actually interested in this year just based on a full offseason with Jimmy Garoppolo. But in this tier, just based on my MFLs that I've done so far, I don't know if it's my fandom, but I have a lot of Jordy Nelson. I just can't get away from his value at this point. I mean, yes,
last year. You see him in the eighth round, ninth round, and you're like, I got to go Jordy. It's the eighth round. What am I going to do? You know, draft one of these other guys? And, you know, I think it's a worthwhile gamble to see if he's got one more solid season in the tank. At least some touchdowns are going to come out of that that role with Gruden's offense, you think?
Well, good. It's not just my fandom then, because, yeah, I see him in that eighth, ninth round, and I'm like, wait, is this Jordy Nelson that's still here? I think, you know, him being the X receiver in John Gruden's offense, I think he's actually going to be moved around a little bit as well. Him and Amari Cooper will be moved around in that offense. And Derek Carr, he's no Aaron Rodgers, but he can throw a back shoulder fade. He can get Jordy Nelson the ball the way that, you know, Aaron Rodgers was getting him the ball in Green Bay. So in this tier, you know, based on the draft position and based on the price, it's Goodwin and Jordy for me. I do love my Cooper Kupp. He was great last year, and I think he'll continue to do great things out of the slot. But there's just so many mouths to feed in LA that I want to get a main target like a Goodwin or a Jordy Nelson.
Yeah, and the thing people, you know, might not realize if they didn't own Kupp is there was weeks where he disappeared. You know, whether it was solid coverage or whatever the offense was doing that week, you know, he had games with no catches, very few catches. So he's a little boomer bust for me, and I know they targeted him in the red zone and he had some touchdowns, but nothing screams, you know, touchdown maker to me about Cooper Kupp. So I like him, but this is a little pricey.
Yeah, he's a great best ball get. He's very frustrating, like you said, to own in a daily lineups or weekly lineups league.
And then you know, you got Devontae Parker, who everyone's still waiting on for a breakout. And you know, as his price falls, I see myself talking, you know, myself more and more into Parker. I know Stills kind of is their deep threat, but you know, Parker, if he can stay healthy on the field and that offense can have any semblance of continuity, he's got a shot. He's shown it in stretches in his career to be a wide receiver one. And, you know, at this price, it's not too bad. If I could get him probably after like Jordy, maybe Aguilar, who people don't realize Aguilar is going to get a good amount of targets. You know, we're not sure what's going to be the case with Alshon when he comes back from the shoulder surgery. You know, he says he's going to be hopeful for the start of the season, but you know, you never know with him. And in general, you know, he played 16 games last year, I believe, and that's very rare for him. So Aguilar is the next most talented receiver. Even though he's in the slot, he's going to probably see a little more volume than he even did last year. All right. So then the next tier, tier seven, we've got Dez Bryant, Sterling Shepard, Robbie Anderson, Kenny Stills, Kelvin Benjamin, Marquise Lee, Rashard Matthews, Allen Hurns, Josh Doctson, Deshaun Jackson, Martavius Bryant, Kenny Golladay, Cameron Meredith, Mohamed Sanu. That's a big tier. There's two guys for me that are clear-cut league winners, at least in a best ball. And if you can play your cards right in a season long, Rashard Matthews, when he's on the field, he has just been, you know, a wide receiver one. Yes, they're changing offenses. There's Corey Davis, you know, getting a full year, full offseason to worry about from a target standpoint. But Matthews is an efficient receiver, and Davis was incredibly inefficient as a rookie. You know, with new coaches in town, that may play into target distribution. At least it should, and until Davis shows otherwise. And then Kenny Golladay, you know, the injury really kind of sapped his middle season. You know, it was a knee injury. That's not an easy thing to recover from for an explosive guy. Kept trying to get onto the field. I think he probably did that detrimentally. You know, he should have just shut down and taken the time to recover. But being a rookie, you want to get out there. You want to help your team. But I think he could absorb a lot of the Marvin Jones touchdowns and targets in the red zone that Jones was beasting with last year. That might be Kenny Golladay this season.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in this tier, I'm a little surprised you went with Matthews just because of his age and, you know, that offense in a whole. It's not very exciting. Mm-hmm. One of the most exciting players in this tier has to be Sterling Shepard. I mean, based on what he did last year, I know Odell Beckham went down, and that was, you know, most of his production was when Beckham was down. But he showed that he could probably be close to a, you know, mid-tier wide receiver two or top-tier wide receiver two. And he's very interesting to me. I know with the drafting of Saquon Barkley, it kind of zaps a little bit of his value. And now they just have all these weapons with Ingram and Beckham, mm-hmm. and Shepard and Saquon. I mean, they have a whole bunch of mouths to feed there. So that's one of the guys I'm looking at in this tier. And then the other one that just kind of sticks out just based on an opportunity standpoint has to be Allen Hurns. Yeah. There's a lot of talk about, you know, Michael Gallup in Dallas, and, you know, he's a rookie receiver, and, you know, I think they took him in the third or fourth round, and everyone knew going into the draft that was their biggest need. So as soon as they took someone, they just automatically assume, okay, well, this guy's going to get all the balls in Dallas. But mm-hmm. I think Allen Hurns has, you know, all the ability and all of the, you know, all the opportunity in Dallas to lead the team in receiving. They really don't have very much outside of him and Ezekiel Elliott to kind of carry that offense. So those are the two guys in this tier that I'm more interested in.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that you find the Tennessee offense to be a bit boring. I feel like, you know, they still may have a little bit of a conservative tendency to run the ball, but with Matt LaFleur coming over from the Rams, he's a Shanahan and McVay offshoot. I think it's going to actually be a fairly creative offense.
I think it'll be creative, and by boring, I think I meant more of a fantasy boring, because you have a two-headed monster in the backfield. You have Delanie mm-hmm. Walker, who's going to get his, and then you have Corey Davis, who is probably going to be drafted ahead of Rashard Matthews just based on potential alone. And mm-hmm. that being the case, there's not really a surefire besides Delanie Walker, and, you know, Marcus Mariota is bleh as a fantasy quarterback. It's just kind of boring. There's just not like a, even in Jacksonville, there's Leonard Fournette. You know he's going to get first to second round value if he stays healthy. And in Tennessee, there's so many, well, you know, Deion Lewis did this last year, but so did Derrick Henry, and now they got to merge together. So there's just a whole bunch of, you know, different things that they have to incorporate in that offense.
Yeah, Mariota will call his own number and score some touchdowns himself, which pulls it out of the rest of the offense's pool. What's going on with Martavius Bryant as our Raiders correspondent?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of rumors out of there about another suspension looming, but I think they're just that. They're just rumors. And based on, you know, what John Gruden said, what, you know, the offense is starting to look like, I think he's going to play the same role that he did in Pittsburgh. I think it's going to be an outside receiver, deep threat. He's not the best route runner. So it's going to be a Jordy Nelson, Amari Cooper, Marshawn Lynch offense. And then, you know, Martavis will get an occasional deep ball, an occasional goal line fade, stuff like that. I mean, if he stays healthy and one of the other two gets hurt, then I can see maybe a little bit of an uptick in production. But he's someone that I'm probably not going to draft on a lot of teams. I might do it in the best ball just in case, you know, he has a few blow up games, though.
Right. Yeah, the NFL just is such a disaster when it comes to suspensions. They really need to sit down at the next collective bargaining agreement, and I'm sure the players are going to push for it, hopefully, if their union is going to earn their money. But, yeah, you know, that's going to probably linger into drafts, and you're going to have to either risk it or, like you said, a best ball scenario late. It's not the worst option. One more guy I want to mention in this tier is Cam Meredith. A lot of people are getting pretty high on Meredith. It sounds like he's back from his knee injury ahead of schedule. You know, he's going to probably fill the slot role. We've seen guys succeed in that offense out of that role in the past. Willie Snead had a great season there. Meredith has, you know, pretty reliable hands, good route runner. You know, it's always a gamble when Sean Payton gets a new player. Sometimes they thrive. Sometimes he casts them aside, a la Adrian Peterson. So there is some risk there, but at this price, I think it's not a bad spot.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that the problem with Cam Meredith, where he landed up, is he landed up in New Orleans with so many mouths to feed, like I've said on a couple of different other teams. But I was high on him last year coming into the year. I thought that he would get a lot of opportunity in Chicago. I think he's going to be a great role player and a better football player than a fantasy player this year. So
that's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, I'll probably take a flyer on him, but he's kind of far down on my list.
All right. And then just to wrap up from the rest of the receivers out there, who's a guy that you're willing to take, you know, with your final pick, whether it be a best ball or otherwise, out of these remaining names?
I think based on opportunity, I like Calvin Ridley as the best rookie wide receiver in this class. I think, you know, he's an Alabama wide receiver. We've seen the Alabama wide receivers that are talented, that just didn't get a lot of opportunities in that offense, come up and do amazing things with Julio Jones. And I know, like, y'all don't think Amari Cooper has been very good, but I think he's been pretty decent. So I kind of like him in most of my drafts. I've seen myself looking at him and saying, you know what, I got to take the flyer on him. And then the other guy in this tier that sticks out above all others is Geronimo Allison. Like I said earlier on Davante Adams, there's really Davante Adams, there's Ty Montgomery, there's Randall Cobb, who's been injured. Montgomery has injury issues as well. And Allison looks like, you know, based on last year and coming into this year, he could slide into any of those wide receiver positions and produce. So if I can get, you know, the number two or number three option in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, I'm probably going to take him if he's available towards the end of the draft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, if it's a best ball, Ted Ginn is going really late in best balls. I know he's getting older, but he scored 4 touchdowns last year. He's good for a chunk play every other game. I wasn't a believer. I thought he was going to lose targets, and he actually got more targets coming over to New Orleans. Breeze targeted him deep plenty of the time, and he even, you know, there was a bunch of plays that they just, you know, didn't connect on that another year together building chemistry. You know, he might have turned those 4 touchdowns into 6 touchdowns. So he's a guy that is a good price in a best ball, and nobody seems to really want him. But if it's season long for me, Jordan Matthews is still ridiculously cheap. I know there's a lot of question marks in New England, but Matthews is a guy who had, you know, early second round, borderline end of first round talent, was drafted early second. You know, this might be my Eagles colors showing through, but he was great for the Eagles in his rookie and second season out of the slot. I think he can do a lot of the things that New England is going to want out of their, you know, inside receiver. The only thing with him is drops have been an issue. That won't fly with Tom Brady. He's just going to stop looking your way, and you'll be dead to him. you know, we've seen that in the past with certain newcomers. But, you know, for almost a free player, I think people are ignoring what Jordan Matthews could possibly do.
Yeah, I'll give the unbiased opinion on Jordan Matthews. How much was around him whenever he was succeeding in Philadelphia? I mean, you know more than me. He was basically their offense. So I think that he's surrounded by – go ahead.
Yeah, not much. He was the number one receiver on that food chain.
And it wasn't close. So I think, you know, being surrounded by better players and you know, not being the main focus, I don't think that he can provide as much upside as a Calvin Ridley or Geronimo Allison for me.
Yeah, we'll see. And then, it's interesting you brought up Geronimo because he was Jody Smith's sleeper last week when we had Jody on. So some good company there for you. All right. And then our toss up tonight for round six is going to be Michael Crabtree, a guy you're clearly familiar with, Colin, from his Raider days, moving over to the Ravens here. That whole offense, every pass catcher is basically brand new. I was trying to project them today, and it's like, where do you even start? I mean, I projected Crabtree for about 120 targets, which is typically what he sees. I think he's probably going to be the option at the top of that. On top of that wide receiver core, and he's a good touchdown catcher. The Ravens, what shocked me when I was digging into their projections is they throw the ball a lot more than I realized. I thought of them as more in my head as a meat and potatoes team. They want to run the ball. They want to play power, you know, football. They throw the ball a large percentage of the time. So there's going to be some targets to go around with their three new receivers and new tight ends, but give me your take on Crabtree as a Raven.
I'm worried about Crabtree as a Raven, not only because his chain is probably going to break multiple times this year, but mostly because Joe Flacco is a deep ball guy and Michael Crabtree cannot run fast. I mean, he showed last year that, you know, he got a little bit banged up, but he is a possession receiver to the T. He runs crisp routes. I watched him ever since he was in Texas Tech. And, you know, he's always been an excellent route runner, but that's not what Joe Flacco looks for. I mean, he kind of does out of the tight end position in like a Dennis Pitta role, but he has a strong arm and he wants to chunk it deep. So with Crabtree going, you know, like you said, in about the sixth, seventh round range, I'm looking at a guy going a little bit after him in Corey Davis, and I'm willing to, you know, put a flyer on him or put a flyer on Marquise Goodwin a couple rounds later instead of taking a possession guy who has no speed, no breakaway ability, and the best case scenario for him, he could get 4 to 5 touchdowns. And that's not someone that I'm looking to get in, you know, the sixth or seventh round.
That's interesting. I would counter that with the season Kamar Aiken put together a couple of years ago. He's definitely a subpar athlete. And now he might have been another case of there was no other receiver in town that was even worth throwing the ball in the direction of. But he was a guy that they targeted, I believe, almost 100 times. So maybe the truth lies somewhere in the middle, and the company he's in at the, in this sixth round and the late 20s, you know, he's wide receiver 26 by the MFL data. That's probably a little early, and people are banking on him repeating his touchdown success. So I don't think you're wrong right there.
If you're Joe Flacco and you're wanting to throw the ball deep, are you looking at Michael Crabtree or are you looking at John Brown?
Right. Yeah. I don't see him getting targeted deep very often. And, Willie Snead's there too. I don't know if he's anything or not. And he was dead to the Saints after his suspension. And, I think he got like 10 targets the whole year. They did not, look kindly on Willie Snead and let him go to the Ravens. So, and the tight ends as well. They like to target the tight ends heavily there. So it's going to be interesting to see how that entire offense shakes out with basically brand new everything.
Yeah, I think their best bet is to put Lamar Jackson out wide and let Joe Flacco throw it to him deep.
It might be Lamar Jackson time sooner than people expected. The Ravens are always a tough team to project. I never feel very high on them, and they just year after year somehow figure out how to just earn a playoff spot and be right there at the end of the season. So. All right, then we'll wrap up here with some sleepers from each of us. Do you have anybody on the tip of your tongue, Colin?
Well, I mean, the biggest one for me was Geronimo Allison. You know, like I said earlier, just being in that offense is something that I'm very interested in. But as a deeper sleeper, it pains me to say that I'm going to go with a Jacksonville receiver just because their quarterback's Blake Bortles. However, I really like D.D. Westbrook. I really like the fact that he's fast. Mm-hmm. He runs really good routes. He came off of an injury last year, got a late start to the season. There are a couple guys in front of him in Marquise Lee and Dante Moncrief who do not scare me. Moncrief and Lee have had their share of injury bugs that they just cannot shake. And D.D. Westbrook was a top second-round pick, I believe, last year. And he was a guy that, you know, coming into the year with before the injury, I was definitely, you know, looking at him as a guy that I was going to take late in a best ball scenario. So in a best ball league, I like D.D. Westbrook, you know, as my last round pick, just in case the guys in front of him go down. And maybe, just maybe, Blake Bortles can improve his game a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's a lot of, you know, cooks in that kitchen. They seem to like Lee, but like you said, he hasn't always been healthy, and they even used him out of the slot a little bit. They used everybody out of the slot a little bit. They didn't know what receiver was what, but outside of Lee, the only guy I'd have much confidence in would be D.D. Westbrook, and he is he's an athlete. He's got some upside, so if he gets targets, he can do a lot with them. And then for me as a sleeper, I'm going to throw out Nyheim Hines. He's getting buzzy at the moment, but his price range, you know, it's still pretty late. It's creeping. It's creeping as the best ball season goes. But, you know, we discussed him a little last week during the running back breakdown with Jody Smith. One of the things I like about him is his role isn't contested, I feel, in that backfield, in the Colts backfield. You know, Robert Turbo Turbin was suspended. You know, he's not really much of a pass catcher. He's a hard-nosed runner. I don't really like him much anyway. You've got Jordan Wilkins, who's kind of an everyman, doesn't really excel in any area. He could get a shot. Marlon Mack is the stud athlete, but outside of some chunk gains and chunk passing gains last season, you know, not what people had hoped for, especially with his draft position. So, you know, the other guys are vying for that early down work. I don't think the passing work is going to be any contested at all for Nyheim Hines. You know, maybe Mac, if they give up on him as the lead back, could fall into that same role. But Hines seems explosive and a guy that, you know, could definitely thrive in an outlet type role for Andrew Luck, who, you know, hasn't been throwing footballs for a little while. So it's nice to have a safety blanket.
It's actually interesting you go with Hines, because in the AFC South preview, which will come out in a couple days with Ben Brennis, I actually said that in the AFC South, Marlon Mack is probably the number two running back that I'm willing to take behind Leonard Fournette. Reason being is because I like his value and I like his opportunity in Indianapolis over, you know, over a Lamar Miller who's so boring that it's unwatchable.
Right.
And, you know, over the two Titans guys, which I don't know what I'm going to get. I don't know if I'm going to get a Deion Lewis-led backfield or a Derrick Henry-led backfield. And I don't really want to risk a fifth to sixth round pick on a question mark. So it's really funny that you go with Hines, because I am on the Marlon Mack bandwagon, because he is just as explosive as Hines, if not more. And he's actually built like a running back. Hines is tiny. And I know that's not, you know, that's not saying much this, you know, in this era of the NFL where size really doesn't matter, but I believe in Marlon Mack, and I think he'll probably take that.
Yeah, I don't think he's got any shot to unseat Mack. Mack seems like the favorite, you know, both what they spent on him in the draft and having a year in the system. Hines is looking at the satellite back. So that's what I'm saying is, you know, his role is uncontested. He's he's not going to lead that backfield in touches, certainly, but as the satellite back getting targets in a PPR, you know, that's, he could be your Chris Thompson type, where, you know, maybe he's got some electricity, and it's a gamble, because, you know, those kind of plays aren't easily projectable. You know, Chris Thompson was scoring touchdowns at just an incredible rate. That's not likely to happen very often, but in an offense that's kind of lacking weapons, you know, outside of T.Y. Hilton, there's not a ton to want to throw to in Indy. So, but good stuff, Colin. Hit us with your Twitter and tell us what you're working on.
You can find me at CWeatherWax13. I'm getting ready to do my football rankings for the upcoming season. Also helping out with FWB's, FWFB's, you know, division previews, and getting everyone ready for the fantasy football season. Also still making appearances on fantasy baseball podcasts throughout the year as well. Still kind of in the thick of that season too. So trying to balance the two is going to be fun. So, yeah, you can check me out at CWeatherWax13.
Yeah, and you can get all of the FWFB rankings over on the site, friendswithfantasybenefits.com. And we just published our first set, I believe, last week, and they'll get updated weekly as people grind away. And you can get me at Roto_Juan. I'm all over the place here with FWFB, podcasts, occasional articles, and the like. So, Colin, thanks for joining me.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me, man.
All right. And may the sports be with you.